It is World Food Day today, and we're taking a moment to pause and reflect on our relationship with food. How well we actually are paying attention to the food we eat. What's the quality of the food you're eating? Earlier on, I was asking about you planting fruits and herbs and all sorts of veggies in your garden. Is this something that you do? Is it something that you're saying, oh my goodness, I'd love to be able to do this, but I'm not doing it currently? Did you grow up in a house where this was something that was done often? Is this something that you were done frequently? Or maybe you're saying, I'd love to be able to do this. Loving some of the voice notes that's been coming in. Definitely encouraging. And I'm going to get to them in a moment. Right now, though, in studio, I'm joined by Jason van Heerden, who is our resident dietitian. You know him. He needs no long introduction at this point in time. Jason, welcome back.
It is so good to be here. And what a beautiful day to be here, Khosi.
Yeah, World Food Day. I'm sure it's a very important day for you.
Very, very, very much.
Let's talk about World Food Day. Before we talk about, you know, planting trees and sustainability and being able to see that we monitor the food we're eating by growing it in our backyard, do you think we actually pay enough attention to World Food Day? Is there enough attention and focus given to such a day?
You know what? If you look at the term World Food Day, I mean, what is it trying to achieve? And it's trying to say, look, we need to look at nourishment, but also in South Africa, we actually have a double whammy. We've got overnourishment, let's say too much food, which leads to malnourishment. And on the other side, undernourishment, so too little food. So we're actually looking at both sides of the coin here to say, where can we find that middle ground of health that we get from food, as well as access to that food as well?
Yeah, I'm so glad that you make mention of the overnourishment. I think a lot of us, we fall into that one where we're eating a little bit too much. I understand as South Africans, and you correct me if I'm wrong, this is something that I read, I think, a year or two ago, talking about how we've got this obsession with our starch. We love starch in South Africa. We love pap. We're going to make pap. We're going to make pap tart. We're going to make pap in different ways because we love our starch. It can't be a good thing for us to be having too much of something that even sometimes may be all right, but our obsession like we have with starch currently.
Yes, you know, it is all about balance. So I just want to say starch does amazing things. Fiber, your nutrients, it gives you energy. Did you know, Khosi, that your brain, the average person's brain, is about 1 to 1.5% of your body's weight, but it uses about 30 to 40% of your body's glucose.
Wow.
And our main form of glucose we get from our carbs. Yes, you can get it from fats and proteins in other ways, but I mean, if you want to perform in sports, I know, I hear you're training for a marathon as well.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to be cognitively good at school, you know, kids concentrating, we need our carbs, but too much of a good thing can become a bad thing. Mm. And it's all about that balance in the ratio with carbs, your fats, your proteins, and your vitamins and minerals.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about those nutrients. You know, I think a good part of making sure that we get a good value of nutrients and good amount of nutrients, a big part of it, and you correct me if I'm wrong, is making sure of the quality of food we eat. I learned not too long ago that I shouldn't oversteam my veggies because then all the nutrients are gone and it's useless. Or I should have just, like, I just found out recently there's canned mushrooms that they are very different from if I'm actually frying mushrooms myself. Let's talk about good quality food and not the hyper one where people are kind of checking the soil that it comes from and all of that stuff. But let's talk about good quality food. How can the average South African ensure that they're eating nutrient rich foods when they're dishing up in the evenings?
Good stuff. So at the end of the day, it comes down to two categories, processed and unprocessed. So in general, not always, but in general, you're more processed foods can lose some nutrients that normally kind of lack a lot of other aspects. But then your unprocessed foods, think about your fruits, your vegetables, your meats, your beans, your legumes, all of those things, a lot more unprocessed. Those are things that would be generally classified as high quality. But how's this for to flip it on its head?
Yeah.
We often think about things such as canned foods as being very processed. But how about this? Some of my clients really struggle to get in vegetables. And they just hasten to buy it and to wash it and then it goes off in the fridge. But now, if you're looking at, let's say, frozen vegetables, yes, it's cut up and yes, it's put it in a bag. But I mean, that's a great way to get your veggies in. Or another way, even tinned food. So some of our clients say, but look, beans take a long time to cook. But if you get beans in a can, which is technically processed, but you wash off that brine, you put it in, let's say, a sieve, wash it off, it's minimally processed. But if it's going to allow us to have more nutrient-dense foods more often, you know, that's actually a very positive thing. So it's two sides of the coin there, but in general, the less processed the food is, in general, the better.
Okay, okay. So there is a point where getting some items that are, quote unquote, a little bit more processed than what I would be making myself, where it works out if it means I actually get to consume the veg and fruit. Because if I'm not going to have it anyway, because I'm avoiding process, and I'm not even having it at slightly processed, and it's a problem because I'm not having it at all.
Exactly.
Okay, okay. Now I understand. And it is an actual thing, I think, especially in this society in 2024, things are moving so much quicker, so much faster, and families aren't having as much time to be able to make the veggies that we buy on a Monday for the week. So they end up going off. So maybe help us understand, what are some of the examples of nutrient-dense foods that are both affordable and accessible for someone who might be listening and thinking, okay, how do I ensure that I'm not like losing out on really, really good nutrients buying the same thing? How can I do that? It's accessible and it's fairly affordable.
Yes, so there's four main groups to look at. So one is your fruits, but it also comes with access. So seasonality, where you are, yeah, those type of things. But I mean, in general, there's no real bad fruits. I mean, fruits, if it's unprocessed, you can enjoy it. You know, too much fruit juice can be a challenge.
Yeah.
But then, you know, also your vegetables, all your vegetables. There's no vegetables that I can say is bad. Mm. Same thing with all your meat, chicken, fish, eggs, beans, all of that. Those, you know, from that aspect, from a protein standpoint, really, really good to go to. And then also with your starches. I mean, your pasta, your rice, you know, they genuinely are. I mean, technically, if you look at pasta, I mean, it is, like, let's say, processed. Your carbohydrates, all of your rice. But it, as long as you're having a balance of all of it together that's accessible, those are really good options to go to. But all your fruits, all your vegetables, and your unprocessed meats.
Yeah, yeah. And especially, like, I think if I'm honest, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, local grains like sorghum is also something that's really good for us to be able to enjoy.
Yes, and our maroch, and we got to love some maroch and pap and cheba.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Okay, no, now you're taking me back home right now. But let's actually, while speaking about maroch, a lot of people are in this focus of growing fruits and veggies in their yards. And this is something that's very important. I remember growing up, and it was something that was highlighted to me, saying, whenever you can, just do it. It doesn't, you don't even need this massive field or half plot to be able to do it. Nowadays, it's even possible, even if you're living in a blocked apartment and you've got a balcony, you can mm-hmm. be able to do it there. And we were talking about it just a little bit earlier, talking about the different things that people have grown. And I want to play you like one or two voice notes just to hear how people are doing, and then we'll chat about it in a little bit.
As for planting, I don't think I have green hands, and sometimes I wish I do, because I grew up in my grandmother's house. There was a lot of fruit trees and just non-fruit trees. There was papaya, there was guava, there was orange, lemon, pomegranate, and I think that's about it for the food ones. Oh, there was also sugar cane, there was also mealie and watermelons and lerotse.
Wow.
And they grew, we at that point I was very, very young, so we never really had to do much. We didn't get given chores to do anything, but my aunt knew how to make knew how to plant like gardens, like onions, carrots, tomatoes, wow, and all those things. Me, I'm bad.
It didn't pass down in the DNA. I've got somebody else saying, hi Chrissy, I have a lemon, a granadilla and tomato tree that had its first crop. Then I have curry leaves, curry leaf tree, mint, shania, I hope I'm reading it right, thyme, parsley and rosemary tree, all in full bloom. I think one of my questions usually when I read stuff like this, I'm just like, I don't know what's easy to plant, what's accessible, what's in good season, what requires the least maintenance, while I make sure that it's something that I'm getting good nutrition in. Because I also don't want to just grow lemon trees only. There's only so much I can get from a lemon. Let's maybe chat about that. That many people want to grow their own food, because that's a one way to ensure that you've got really good quality food, that you know where it comes from, you know it's sourced from your backyard or your balcony. Are there some foods that are easy to grow that one can start with if they're listening to this conversation?
You know what? I'm going to answer it from a different way. And if you actually look at in South Africa, the most common foods that are grown at home, I think there's a reason for that, in that it's easily accessible,
yeah,
less maintenance, and but you do need the right equipment. So in South Africa, we do a lot of onions, our tomatoes, our potatoes. And from a fruit standpoint, we do a lot of orange, we do a lot of apple, and our herbs, those are quite easy, yeah, to do. And I mean, you've even seen these egg boxes, people putting herbs in there.
Yes,
remember
yes.
those school experiments we did?
Yes.
Growing that on the windowsill. So that could work quite nice.
Yeah, okay. So it's encouraging because people are now able to actually do well in doing it themselves. And kids see it. I mean, there was a voice note that came in earlier where a little boy was saying that this is something that he's seeing his mom do close to the door. But realizing that you kind of see where the food comes from and you pay attention to the source of the food. I know this is something that I'm seeing in a lot of stores where they'll actually write their locally sourced, locally produced, local farming. Is this something that one should actually pay attention to when you're buying stuff to see where it comes from, in ensuring that it's actually good quality from here, not imported, and now you're paying so much tax on top of that and it's so expensive?
Yes. So luckily, there are really good laws in South Africa that say, listen, if you want to supply food to, let's say, supermarkets, there are certain standards you need to meet. So that, you know, like, let's say your herbicides and pesticides, and, you know, they've got to make sure that they've got a certain nutrient profile, is that if they don't meet those standards, they cannot be sold. Yeah. So if you're going to your main markets, luckily there are laws that we don't even need to actually think about of
that's
that.
Great.
Will they have this pesticide or that there, because they've been approved and they are at the safe levels.
Okay, that's fantastic. Because I know myself, I'm just like, I don't know. I'm just looking at the rands and cents and that's about it, but not actually checking about some other things. So it's great that if it's on the shelf, chances are that it's actually good because it's been approved to actually be on the shelf. One other part, Jason, we've been speaking on the one side of what you said at the start of this interview, speaking about overnutrition, but then there's undernutrition, malnutrition to be specific. And I think this is a call to then all of us and to make a play our part and make a difference to this one. Let's speak about how can we contribute to improving food security and ensuring that everyone has access to good food.
Oh man, I'm so passionate about this. So if you're looking at teaching skills as a whole, is that, let's say, if you were to look at a bigger company, or let's say government, going and just giving healthy food, that's going to be quite short-lived. And, you know, great. But the thing is, if you actually look at long-term sustainability, it does come from education and access. The thing, and that's why I'm so passionate about with schools trying to teach kids, but listen, let's plant some plants. Let's see how it grows. Let's do taxes. Let's do finances. You know, all these different things. But from a nutrition standpoint, how cool would it be if we were taught at school about nutrition?
Yeah.
Like, we glance over it for maybe like a day, but really going in depth in that and being taught from a young age. So education, but also education on going about how can we then find, let's say, that tire that's on the side of the road, and let's say that pot plant, or, you know, that PVC pipe, you know, that education that we can now have to what we already have, and use that to now grow from there. But education and access, because you can also have education on how to do it, but if you don't have access to the seeds, to the fertilizer, or know how to make it yourself, you know, and how much water to give, it all comes down to education and access in, you know, so that people can grow it themselves. And that's why I think courses and teaching at school should be more openly explored.
Yeah. And I guess we also have a part to play ourselves in ensuring that we, at the very least, pass it down to our children, that they then have access to that information and they can do something about it, in the hopes that it becomes a norm for them, that there's going to be something growing in the yard, even if at the end of the year it's only one of them that's alive, but they realize that that is something that is existing, in the hopes that it spreads to the rest of the community.
And, you know, and I think in a world of instant gratification, is that, you know, to have something like, let's say, growing tomatoes, which you'll only see in a couple of weeks, and if you don't give it water for a week, if you don't, you know, it's going to die. You know, and kind of teaching that, you know, when it's just going to taste that much better knowing that you grow it, like that you grew it and you could eat it.
Oh man, I second that 100%. I did see a video some time ago on TikTok. This lady had planted some watermelon and she was excited for her first harvest. So she's got this beautiful watermelon that's looking fantastic. And you know how they say there's certain signs that show you that it's ready and it's ripe. If it's dark on the one side, and all these people that listen and put their ears to the veggies, I don't know what they hear. The veggie speaks back at them. We are the mere humans who don't hear that. But anyway, needless to say, she grabbed it. She's excited. She's got a video she's recording saying, my first harvest of watermelon. And as she slices through, it's solid, like this light green, and there's like tons of seeds in the middle. And she's thinking, what in the world's going on? Only to find out in investigation that where she planted her watermelon was very close to her tomato tree. Uh-huh. And there was a little bit of a relationship that happened between those two seeds. And what she's got over there is a water tomato, a tomato lemon. I don't even know what to call it.
Water tato.
Water tato. Sounds about right. Jason, thank you so much. I think on this World Food Day, in addressing, yes, the very, very sad reality of malnutrition and not having enough food to everybody, you've really helped us to understand even how important it is to then have good quality food and how that can be found in the convenience of, yes, fresh produce, but also you're making me feel comfortable that tinned stuff is actually maybe good if I'm not even having it in fresh produce. Mm. That is a little bit more accessible and a lot more affordable, and that we can be able to go ahead and plant a lot of the fruits and veggies that you've mentioned that are easy and are some of the more popular ones in South Africa. So I guess it's time for me to go find those egg boxes. go plant a couple of herbs, because I think it might be really good. So thank you so much.
You know what, as we end off, I want to give some tactical, you know, let's say a question with the parents. Have a chat with your kids and say, look, what is your relationship with food with regards to growing it? Do you think you would have fun doing it? What about, you know, with your couples, you know, maybe if you want to maybe bond up that relationship, why don't you say, look, why don't we try and grow a tomato together? You know, maybe, you know, this can be, you know, we learn skills, you know, we bond together, we get nutritious food. I think it's a win-win.
Last time Jason was here, he was challenging us to just look at sugar differently. This time he's challenging us to go on and plant and do it together. I love this. A man that's always leaving us with something to go and do. I think with the couples, one can grow or both of them each grow a tomato tree, and let's see which one we'll be using over Christmas to make the gravy.